Hi, everyone. This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program in the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, January 27th, 2015. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Jim, however, will not be with us today. He is in Nebraska. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Austin and Carla, are you on board and ready to go?
We are.
Good to go.
All right, then. We will dive right into our opening quote. This one comes from February 12, 2006. Quo says, "We would say to you that if you genuinely, sincerely, and honestly seek the truth of your own being, and if you are willing to commit ineluctably and simply to living your life in the pursuit of that seeking, you are worthy to be called a priest and an adept."
Founding words. It just means we are worthy to be called sincere seekers. Sincere in that we are who we are. We're who we say we are. We're who we feel we are in the world. To become totally true to oneself. We have so many masks, engage in so many games. Some we don't even know we're playing. But it is to the one who is genuinely, honestly knowing himself that this high praise goes. I had a friend long ago who rode with me to Box Society every week, and we talked about all manner of things. One thing I very much remember her saying was that she had the feeling that if she peeled away all of her masks, in the end, she would come up against zero. She wouldn't be anyone at all. Jane, how can you possibly say that? Because I experience her as very, very full of her true and ineluctable self. She said, "Oh no," she said, "I am so full of it in so many ways. I don't even know who I am. I've been pleasing people since the day I was born. I have no idea who I am." I find that to be very difficult to believe of her or anyone. But then many of us might say we don't really know who we are. Well, if we don't, it's time to find out. And I guess one way to find out is to take the masks off. Say, well, if I'm not this, then what? Surely you won't go too far before you come up against the full stop of selfhood. Remember the Old Testament definition of Godhead? I am that I am. And so we can say of our own self as creator, I am that I am. But just be sure that you are what you are. Knowing the self is the first step towards becoming the creator. Know the self, accept the self, become the creator. Of course, it does seem that there's a somewhat of a large gap between accepting the self and becoming the creator. But then why should there be? Why should creatorhood be so far away from us? We're all a spark of the creator. And when we become our essence, when we know ourselves to be true, and truly, truly true, and that self is the creator. Our own little piece of the creator, saying you are or I am the creator. I'm saying that in the way that they mean it here, we become the creator when we become true to ourselves. So it's very important that we do that. It helps not to be working in a vacuum. Because people will tell you if you're full of it very quickly. And the better friend they are, the more quickly they'll tell you. And the more true they'll be. So you might check every once in a while. Do I have this right? Sound the selfhood against the stop, the full stop of who you feel yourself to be. Because that is who you are. Don't let anyone ever tell you any part of who you are. You and you alone, gloriously, joyfully, responsible. I salute you, all of you. All of you pieces of the Creator. Namaste, the Creator in me, Creator in you. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Carla. Our first question today comes from Kay Sean via email, who writes, I am curious about a phenomena that I have been experiencing for almost a year now. I hear this high-pitched sound that seems to come from within. It began one night while I was meditating on the original thought, and suddenly this light appeared in my mind's eye, and it was accompanied by this sound. Ever since, I have been able to hear it periodically or at will. I'm wondering if there is more information on this. Takers?
Well, I guess I'd go first and just say that there are all kinds of ways to discover the Creator in oneself. Or at all. For some it's a sound, for some it is a feeling. Each person would have to fill in the blank for himself. But that white light is a very good sign that the Creator is on board, that you are engaged in knowing the Creator and in knowing yourself.
There is a material explanation, which I'll share because it's a common way for a lot of people, non-spiritual people, to dismiss this idea of ear tones being significant. And I think it's pretty interesting sort of physiological thing on its own. So when you have an audio setup, like say you have a microphone and a speaker, And, you know, when the microphone gets too close to the speaker and causes a loud ringing noise, apparently a very small version of that can happen within our ears.
We have a 60-cycle hum.
Well, what happens is when the microphone gets too close to the speaker, the sound from the speaker goes into the microphone, then goes back to the microphone, and it makes a feedback loop. And so the way the ear works is your eardrum vibrates, or air around vibrates your eardrum, and your brain translates that into the sounds that you hear. But there are also hairs around your eardrum that can vibrate to either help your eardrum hear, but also to protect your eardrum. So if the hair starts vibrating the eardrum or the eardrum starts vibrating the hair, it can also cause that type of feedback loop. And so I've heard that as a way to kind of dismiss this idea of tones just randomly appearing in your ear. But I don't necessarily buy it as the whole explanation, because I have personally experienced many, many more ear tones when I am in a consistent state of spiritual seeking, or if my general mindset in my life is spiritually oriented. The tones hardly ever, in my experience, happen when I'm focused in a specific way, but just generally in my life, if I am on a path of spiritual seeking, I hear ear tones. And when I'm not, when I'm allowing myself to be constantly distracted and kind of just put my seeking on the back burner, I hardly ever hear these ear tones myself. So I would imagine that ear tones would mean something unique to each person who experiences them. And I would imagine for Kayshawn, it's a similar thing. For me, I take it as a sign that I'm on a positive path, that I'm on the path that I need to be on, that the contemplating that I'm doing, the mindset that I have, is causing some sort of forward momentum in my evolution. And when I'm not hearing them, it's because I don't have that forward momentum in my evolution. I've gotten kind of stagnant. That's how I interpret my own, and I think everybody, if they kind of pay attention to the circumstances in which they hear these ear tones, can probably make some connections to when they're hearing them or when they might not be hearing them, and what they might mean to that person specifically, because it's probably a sign from your inner self, your higher self.
That's quite true. For myself, I hear them as a reminder, come on, Ruckert, get back on track here. So it's a reminder to me.
Myself, I haven't been able to form solid conclusions about the reason for the tones that I do hear, which can be as clear and as striking as one hitting a gong right next to you, except it's not a physical sound in the environment around you. Like Carla said, she feels that hers are reminders. I don't know if I'm being prompted. I don't know if I'm receiving confirmation. Sometimes I am able to form a connection to circumstance or to my thoughts. But sometimes they arrive at random, and sometimes they happen in clusters. Often I receive those or groupings of synchronicity when we are approaching a homecoming or other LL research event. Often the week prior or just the few days leading up to the event, I'll experience a cluster. If it's not strictly a physiological thing that's happening for you, Kayshawn, I think the only other thing I could add to what Austin and Carla have already said, and it's very general and vague, actually it's in keeping with what they've both said, is in 1647 in the Law of One, Don asked about a very specific and unique phenomena that the LL group was experiencing during the raw contact. They were seeing silver flecks, physical silver flecks, manifest in front of them and float in the air.
And a lot of times on my face, right around my nose.
They would hover in front of your face or land?
No, they would be on my nose.
So Don asked about those and asked of Ra, can you tell me of the silver flecks that we have found sometimes on our faces or elsewhere? And Ra says, These of which you speak are a materialization of a subjectively oriented signpost, indicating to one mind-body-spirit complex and no other a meaning of subjective nature. So I think that basic rationale applies to your ear tones, your sense of light, or whatever other bizarre things that you may experience. They're subjectively designed signposts that are for you and may not translate to somebody else or may not have an objective meaning outside of yourself.
That makes sense to me.
Ra also talked specifically about ear tones. Well, Don asked specifically about his own ear tones, and Ra talks about ear tones in the right ear being a positive message and in the left ear being a negative message. And I suspect that was kind of specific for Don.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I've had ear tones in my left ear when I've experienced positive things,
yeah,
and vice versa. So I wouldn't put too much weight into that. But Ra does talk about it in session 44. Don asks him what ear tones are about.
Yeah, same here with the left-right. I have been in very positive states of mind and gotten, or doing what I feel is a positive thing and gotten a left ear tone. So I, just like dreams, I have not been able to translate or make sense of the ear tone so much. Our next question comes from Jimmy, sent via email. Jimmy writes, first of all, thank you very much for the free e-version of the Wanderer's Handbook. It is a wonderful book and it is greatly appreciated. I do have a question, and pardon me if the answer is found in the book, as I have not yet finished it. The question is, if a service-to-others-oriented person failed to achieve graduation at the time of this harvest by the slimmest of margins, say he or she achieved only a grade of 50%, why would that person have to repeat the master cycle of third density all 75,000 years? The lesson that he or she would still have to learn in third density would not be much and probably wouldn't require that many more lifetimes. Why can't that person just go through a few more incarnations and graduate? As an analogy, if you failed to achieve a university diploma because you were missing only a few credits, you would not be required to redo all 4 years. You could just do a summer semester.
I really don't know why that would not be true, actually. If you weren't able to graduate at the time of this particular physical death, then what about the next physical death? If he is able to graduate and willing to graduate, then I would guess all signposts would go towards moving into graduation mode at the time of physical death, whenever that might be, whether or not it's when everybody else goes.
Yeah, I've had similar thoughts as Jimmy, and I felt that this sentiment, which I think is common around the Law of One and Kuo channelings, that anybody who wasn't ready to harvest by this point would have to do an entire 75,000-year cycle, again, wasn't quite right. From what I understand of how the harvest thing works, though, is that it's pretty rare for a positive entity to reach a point in the middle of a harvest cycle where it can harvest itself and graduate itself. There's something about the harvesting that happens, in our case, every 25,000 years, that allows a mind-body-spirit complex to be harvested and then to be placed in a different location. Apparently it's possible for an entity to do it for themselves, but it's not the normal thing that happens.
Well, it probably isn't, but I think that if there were enough desire on the part of a person and he really were ready to move ahead into graduation mode, that he might be able to, not at anybody else's time, but at his time.
Right, yeah, and if somebody does that, then they probably would not have to experience an entire third density cycle. But for other people who don't have whatever it takes to harvest yourself, one scenario I could imagine is that this person who is close to graduation but didn't quite get there incarnates into a new cycle, and maybe within their first few lives they reach a point of harvestability, and then they kind of just hang out in time space outside of incarnation until that harvest comes up. And I don't think that waiting around for 25,000 years in time space seems like that big of a deal from the vantage of time space. I'm not really sure, but
I think that's entirely true.
Yeah, it might not really be that. Like, wouldn't, you know, us
wouldn't
in space time.
Wouldn't be any time at all.
Yeah, we think about that and we're like, oh, God, 25,000 years, what am I going to do? But in time space, it, you know, they might just be able to, you know, take a nap or something and wake up 25,000 years later.
That's right.
A thousand evenings
in
there's also
eyesight are but an evening gone. Remember that old hymn that talked about the difference between.
That is interesting. Yeah, there's obviously a different perception of time passage. And also from time-space, somebody who's reached harvestability but has not been harvested, there are cases of channels who have channeled such beings who kind of their desire is to basically stay in time-space and offer help for the people who haven't harvested yet. So that person might not need to incarnate to continue helping the people in space-time, and then they just help people until the next 25,000-year cycle, and then they get harvested. But there is another scenario I could imagine where Ra talks about during the final harvest where entities are placed in the appropriate time-space for their level of learning, and perhaps a person who's nearing the harvest could be taken to a third-density planet that is near the same level of progression as they are generally, and maybe has a similar type of archetypal mind as we do, and incarnating into that planet will not be much of a hiccup for them if that planet has a similar kind of social dynamic that we do. They can kind of just pick up exactly where they left off, and perhaps that society is nearing its own harvest, and they can harvest with that society instead of ours, and they don't have to go through the whole cycle again. Maybe they're able to just incarnate near the end of another cycle and hit that cycle. But that's speculation. I think the mechanics of harvest are something that is very hotly debated among Law of One students. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, as a quick point in response to Jimmy's question, Jimmy said, why would that person have to repeat a master cycle of all 75,000 years? And Austin mentioned 25,000 years a few times within wanted to add to that and say specifically to Jimmy that in this scenario that Jimmy posits where the third density entity has to repeat a cycle, it's not necessarily necessary that they do a full 75,000 years, but the opportunity comes at minimum every 25,000 years.
Right.
So this question kind of presumes too, that more third density experience is a bad thing. And I wanted to speak to that first and say that it's from the standpoint of the Creator and spiritual evolution and the possibilities of growth and polarization. Third density and any portion of evolution isn't something to be avoided or escaped or to be quickly completed. Yeah, I'm not going to say that word right. It's not a prison sentence, though. The reaction of the wanderer once incarnated to the vibrations of this planet, it becomes understandable that one would want to complete it quickly, because this particular planet, especially relative to the wanderer's vibrations, is a kind of shit show, you might say. It's a difficult place to be in.
We could call it a challenge.
A challenge, yes. And it's highly common among wanderers to want to be able to leave this experience and be done with this experience. And the other aspect I would point out, and Austin was touching on this, is that where one goes is a matter of self-choosing. The question talks about the parameters of harvest, but at the same time, I get the sense that there's like this, the entity is a kind of a passive victim, so to speak, of the harvesting cycle. And Ra emphasizes multiple times that the entity goes where they need to be according to their own choice and according to their vibratory levels. And as Austin was saying, too, the seeker will choose how best to use that next 25,000 years. They may not have to have a ton of lifetimes. They may only need a couple. And as Carla said, there's the possibility of harvesting oneself. One needn't wait until the 25,000-year ticking of the hour. And another thought is that being harvestable by definition means that you are more inclined towards service. You're all the more oriented towards wanting to serve. Your vibration has reached that level where that becomes an overriding conscious desire of yours to help other people. So another 25,000 years in third density would give you precisely that wonderful opportunity to do just that and to fulfill your own nature and your own vibration. So again, it's not something to be avoided per se. And let's see what time is. 1:27. Yeah, I guess I'll read a few raw excerpts where they talk about the self-choosing of harvest. In 20.27, sorry, skip that one. 6.14, Ra says, those who, finishing a cycle of experience, demonstrate various grades of distortion of that understanding of thought and action will be separated by their own choice into the vibratory distortion most comfortable to their mind-body-spirit complexes. This process is guarded or watched by those nurturing beings who, being very close to the law of one in their distortions, nevertheless have the distortion towards active service. They go on to say, thus the illusion is created of light. This is in varying degrees of intensity. The spirit complex of each harvested entity moves along the line of light until the light grows too glaring, at which time the entity stops. This entity may have barely reached the third density or may be very, very close to the ending of third density. Basically, Ra goes on to say, nevertheless, you go where you're supposed to go. And then in 10.9, Ra says, at this time, the harvested mind, body, spirit, totality, beingness, evaluates the density needs of its beingness and chooses the more appropriate new environment for either a repetition of the cycle or a moving forward into the next cycle. This is the manner of the harvesting, guarded and watched over by many. And my final thought to that is his university analogy is really good. I mean, if you're close to graduating, you wouldn't need to go through all four years again if you just need a few more credits. And in trying to find another analogy that clarifies the harvesting situation, I wasn't doing a good job, but the one I came up with, and it is poor, is that these windows of harvesting open every 25,000 years. So maybe it's kind of like however the mechanics of the universe work, it's somewhat like a scheduled train. I mean, if you qualify yourself to get to the train station at that time and are ready and able to hop on that train, you can catch the ride. But it doesn't come around again for another 25,000 years, though you may be qualified to be at that train station prior to the 25,000-year point. You have to wait till its next scheduled departure unless you're able to penetrate the eighth level or the violet ray and harvest yourself.
It does seem less likely that a person would just simply go off on his own and graduate. Usually these things happen in rhythms. So I'd say every 25,000 years is probably the quickest that a person would feel comfortable graduating. Just, you know, from the standpoint of having company and it being an event, you know, that takes place for more than just you. It takes place over a wide spectrum of the people that are available. So probably the 25,000 to waiting next time. And maybe it does seem like a long time to wait at the station. But, of course, you're not waiting at the station. You're actively participating in the challenges and opportunities of Earth life. And the more you see life in terms of opportunities and in terms of challenges, the more likely you are going to be having a ball at it, doing well with it. Because if you just look at it as, oh, what a drag, what a bore, this is so, you know, and just dread it the way you dread the first day of school, say, then you make it harder on yourself. The more you look forward to getting on with it, the more you will enjoy the process.
A very good example of that is when Ra talks about during the second cycle on Earth, there was a small group of entities who reached harvestability, and once they were given the opportunity to harvest, they declined and chose to stay on Earth for the next 25,000-year cycle to help those other people, other entities on Earth, reach the point of harvestability as well, because they felt compelled to offer that service to the people they consider brothers and sisters or family. So that's the sort of mindset of, I think, somebody who has reached harvestability, or maybe not in every single case, because, you know, it's an infinitely unique creation, but mm-hmm. these entities in particular were so compelled to service that they chose to stick around in third density, even though they could have graduated and even have incarnated, according to Ra, back into third density in order to do so, as St. Francis or St. Teresa, and I forget the third one that Ra mentioned.
Augustine.
So that is sort of how you might approach being near harvestability or at harvestability and looking at third density again. It might not seem so much like a difficult class. Might seem more like opportunity.
That's right.
Great thoughts, guys. Anything further to add?
Nope, not on my end.
All right.
All right, we move on to Cyprian's question sent via email. I broke this one into four parts to make it a little bit more digestible. I'll go with the pronunciation of Cyprian.
Cyprian is right.
That's right. Oh, okay. The first of the four parts is, I have been conflicted for a long time with the channeled material of Ra for its interpretation of Jesus. Ra says at one point that the entity known as Jesus polarized sufficiently and went on to fourth density. Quick correction here, Cyprian. Ra says that Jesus went on to fifth density after his incarnation here.
It was fourth density at the time of his incarnation.
Yeah.
Yeah, he corrected himself.
To continue with Cyprian's thoughts, where he presently resides. This seemed quite dodgy to me at the time, since there is no way I could have accepted it. After all, in my own regression work, I seem to remember an existence in fifth density, which would imply I am farther on the road than Christ, which I certainly am not. So my interpretation of Cyprian's statement here is how Cyprian feels that they came from a higher evolutionary position than Jesus turned to after incarnation. Yet, in the earth plane, Jesus was a clearly more advanced entity than Cyprian. So how does that work? Why is that the case? I think that's what Cyprian is saying here.
Well, I think that Jesus loved desperately, tremendously, fully, totally, completely. And that love in the sacrificing of himself for others. Degree of love is like 98 or 99% of the amount that you could love. You only have to make 51%. In order to graduate and get on with learning the lessons of wisdom. So it's entirely possible that this guy is learning the lessons of wisdom, snuck through on 51% at some previous time of graduation from third to fourth density. And did he love like that? I don't think that you can measure love and wisdom on the same measuring stick. They're entirely different. I know that I've known people in my life that were enormously wise, incredibly wise. But they had all of the love in them of an onion. And what can I say? They liked to think of things logically and sanely and rationally, and they did not like. So they were not engaging the heart. They were engaging their minds. And I think it's easier for us to engage the mind, really, than it is to engage the heart, because the heart is so vulnerable, and you're seemingly putting yourself out for all the world to snipe at when you love and just don't back that up with any defense. And that's what love does. It does not have defense. It simply loves. I have heard it said that the longest 14 inches in the world are from the head to the heart, from the mind to the feeling. And I think that's probably true. You cannot judge Jesus and his wisdom in the same way you would judge yourself in your wisdom. How do you do that? How do you judge someone else's degree of wisdom? Obviously, he had no wisdom at the time that he gave himself up for us. You can argue endlessly about whether or not he succeeded in giving himself up for us. The point is, that's what he intended. And intention is so very important in terms of time-space. So, you know, get your thinking a little bit more square, sir, and look at the mind and the heart separately, as does the ways of graduation, first the heart, then the mind. And, of course, you'll notice you go back and do, in sixth density, you go back and study the heart in conjunction with wisdom. How to merge those two so that you have wisdom that is compassionate, or compassion that is wise, like Solomon. Perhaps that clears it up for you.
On a similar note, like Carla was saying, people may incarnate expressing or intending to balance certain aspects, especially coming from certain densities that may need to balance certain aspects or may be strong with certain aspects, and Jesus coming from a fourth density plane would be very strong in a compassionate aspect, and Carla mentioned martyrdom being not necessarily the wisest choice. That's what Ra said also. Ra disagreed that martyrdom was helpful, but then said that fourth density entities may be prone to martyrdom because that is sort of an ultimate expression of compassion through sacrifice. But I think a big part of what might help Cyprian understand what seems to be a difference between Jesus's spiritual nature and Cyprian's own spiritual nature is the idea of pre-incarnative decisions and choices and plans. Ra talks about how Jesus had a mission in mind, and martyrdom was part of that mission, but Ra doesn't really talk very specifically about what the mission was, but I suspect that Jesus had a very intentional mission of being a figure of love and inspiration and inspiring people in the time that he incarnated in a very grand way, the way that he did. And so in order to do that, had to kind of remove some blocks that he had innately in himself to access this potential, this Christhood potential that he was able to manifest. And just because he chose that path and chose to have less obstacles between himself and that potential, or perhaps just a life scenario which would move him very efficiently through those obstacles, doesn't necessarily mean that he is, in the grand sense of his total being, more advanced than Cyprian would be. Cyprian, you're likely, if you are further along than Jesus, as you suspect given the raw material and your own past life regressions, you have that Christhood potential within you. You have the same potential to love as Jesus had within you, but you incarnated with perhaps more obstacles between you and that potential, more separation, or the illusion, at least, of separation between yourself and this potential to love in the capacity that Jesus could love. And you incarnate like that for a reason, in order to balance certain things, in order to learn certain lessons. And I think that it's much more common for wanderers to incarnate less like Jesus and more like a quote-unquote normal third density entity, because I think part of the goal of incarnating into third density for wanderers is to serve as an example of how we can be within the same confusion, within the same sorrow that brought the wanderers here, and break through that to realize love within any moment and to recognize the type of love that Jesus shared in his own mission. So perhaps that explains the difference that Cyprian sees, is that Jesus kind of chose this very specific path that would require him to access those potentials in a very grand way, when other wanderers typically won't access them in such grand ways. We will access them in smaller ways that I don't think are necessarily less meaningful. But
And besides, how many times have we heard of people giving up their lives for someone else in a moment of great crisis? Often this is war, or a mother giving up her life for her child, but where there is some reason to have that, you know, sort of emergency thing come about where you just feel the need to choose.
I'm glad you guys responded first to this question, because it's given me a lot to chew over and springboard off of. I like what Austin ended his response on by saying, the service and the sacrifice that quote-unquote normal third entity entities make, even if they are of wanderer origin, is no less meaningful in the grand scheme of things than Jesus's work. And like Carla was just saying, people are doing Christ-like acts all the time, especially in terms of sacrificing themselves for the preservation or well-being or betterment of another person. I would emphasize what Austin was already emphasizing, and that's the aspect of free will or choice. I think each of us has, each entity, whether wander or not, has different missions and different work and different lessons. And that difference is a result of the play of free will. Jesus' path was a result of his own free will, just as Cyprian, your path is a result of yours. And in Jesus' case, he did things that we would consider miraculous. He worked with intelligent energy through the gateway and transcended the rules of the illusion somewhat, but that is a result of the work that he did. Apparently, according to Ra, Jesus received some training and understanding in Atlantis, and during those times there was likely considerable work in consciousness that Jesus undertook. And then when that same entity was incarnated into the Jesus that we all know from history, Yehoshua, he had an unusual ability to remember his training from that Atlantean time. and was somewhat of a prodigy in that regard.
And this does happen.
That remembering?
That unusual remembering, yes, of a certain thing that is quite unusual for other people, you know, in other people's eyes. But in that one person, it just stands out, and that is what must be done.
Ramana Maharshi, who's a favorite of mine, said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but often the prodigy is someone who has done a lot of work in a past life in that particular area and then remembers early on in their life that past life work. For instance, a Mozart. Who's composing pieces at, I don't know, 5 years old or a very early age and
right.
doing so from a very gifted standpoint. So Jesus didn't necessarily have anything inherently special about him. He, as an entity within this plane of experience, did that work in consciousness, thanks in part to the environment that and catalyst that Atlantis apparently offered. But we're all capable of doing the same or similar through our own work and our own life. If we have the same faculties of will and faith and can exercise those to advance according to our own abilities and intentions and desires to serve.
We can. And if I may, I would call in the theory, which I have, that you don't develop into a Christ. You don a mantle of Christhood. You wear it, and you are a Christed one. But that doesn't mean that you're not totally human. To me, that makes a lot of sense.
That, Carla, actually segues into the next part of Cyprian's question. And basically, I'll paraphrase for him. He's asking about whether Jesus was born the person that he was, just by nature he was the entity we know, or he developed through progression. Progressive was his word. Developed into that state of consciousness. So,
yeah, and I would say that a certain amount has to be given to the development theory. You have to want to take on the mantle of Christhood. But Jesus encouraged all of us to do exactly that, to take on that mantle. He said, there's nothing that I've done that you all can't do. And he wasn't talking about, well, go to school the way I did, you know. I think he donned a mantle. He took it on himself. And it just felt right to him to do that. And I think it must feel right to people who do similar things, that they do that, or they wouldn't have the nerve.
I would say it's a bit of both, progression and sort of being born into it. More what Carla is saying, I agree completely with what she's saying, but like you were talking about, Gary, Jesus supposedly had lifetimes in which he learned to do the things that he then did during his life as Christ, and that's not to say that Cyprian, maybe in his own experiences as a wanderer or when Cyprian was in third density or in fourth density, didn't have lifetimes where this work was all done. But I think that Jesus, as I was saying earlier, made a plan to basically have a life that would help him break through those barriers at an accelerated rate in order to achieve this mission that he wanted to achieve. And who knows if Jesus knew at the time that his life would ring basically throughout the rest of human history as the way that it has done. But I think that it just has to do with what we plan to do within our incarnation. whether we plan to serve as a type of beacon, as a passive generator, as whether we want to concentrate more on balancing our own imbalances or experiencing certain situations to then show that love can be found within certain situations. There's just an infinite number of reasons and ways that we can plan our incarnation to find love or show love or be an example of love. And I think it's just a simple matter of planning and then utilizing and taking advantage and doing the work to put that plan in motion.
And everything Austin describes, you can see it rich with free will. I think anything that happens in this universe, according to Ra's cosmology, is a function of free will, some aspect of the Creator exercising that free will to know itself and to choose its own journey of evolution and to set its own lessons, so on and so forth. So I don't see Jesus or anybody really as being kind of made or constructed special or born special, like he has the midichlorians inside necessary to be the Jedi, according to George Lucas's
We don't
prequel.
Talk about midichlorians.
Yeah. It's taboo around these parts. But rather, it is all development. It's all free will. That free will is a very complex system, and it's not always consciously exercised. There are a host of subconscious factors that play into free will,
mm-hmm.
and free will is exercised on a pre-incarnational level that appears while one is within incarnation as destiny or invisible guiding hands. But at any level you look at it, it is still choice, still choosing, and still work to do. And ultimately, the incarnate self, its final act of will and its highest act of the personal will, at least, is an act of surrender to a higher will. But nonetheless, that entity has done work, is doing work, and will do work in consciousness, even if that work is to surrender or to enter what may seem to the outsider a passive state of acceptance. That nevertheless, still there is a responsibility on that entity's shoulders to do that work. Any further thoughts on the second part of Cyprian's question?
Nope.
No, I think you've covered it well, Gary.
Yeah, 150. All right, well, we'll squeak in the last of Cyprian's questions. Before Cyprian's final question, he or she mentioned an idea saying that it would be marvelous to have all the transcripts in a searchable database and arranged by subject. Yeah, it's the second what Carla said. We're with the new website, we're trying to achieve just that, make them searchable by topic, searchable by concepts addressed within those transcripts, searchable by the entity that was channeled, whether it was Quo, Hatan, et cetera, and hopefully a variety of other ways. But it's a long-term project, and it's in the works. So Cyprian's final question is, do you perhaps believe it could have been possible that the contact with Ra suffered distortion in regards to such a powerful and important subject that could have attracted greetings from service-to-self entities? I think he may be talking about Carla's Christian bias. I'm not sure. Since my view is that the Ra contact was very much ailed by Don's focus on factual material, which subsequently brought the window of opportunity for all the pain and suffering that was to follow at one point. I would say that Cyprian's understanding does not match my own of what transpired during the Ra contact. I did not see any kind of impeding or debilitating overemphasis on factual material on Don's part. He certainly meandered, but I thought he kept a fairly pure focus in terms of being focused on the universal questions and spiritual principles and retrieving information that would apply to all and empower all positively oriented beings. Though there was some slight deviation, Ra adequately cautioned the group about straying into those areas and the subsequent potential to lose the contact, that that deviation was never pursued any further.
And I would like to point out, as someone that knew Don very well, that in his own life, he could care less about sex. It just didn't enter into his way of judging catalyst. He was a man that was a scientist through and through, up and down and sideways. So I think that perhaps there is, yes, as you said, Gary, a certain amount of...
I was supposing that Cyprian was targeting a Christian bias on the part of the instrument as being a possible source of distorting the information.
Well, I wouldn't have been surprised at that either.
I'm only speculating.
Just a quick note, we might go over on our time here. If anybody's listening live, you can always catch the end of the show through our archives, blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch.
Well, in the event, why don't we close out that by saying that, folks, we love you all very much, and we hope that you will ask us many, many questions along the way.
And before we go, Austin, did you have any thoughts to add to that question?
Just for the last question, just I think that, you know, Cyprian, you're asking us, who are very... we have a close relationship with this material, so we have opinions, but, you know, we aren't objective in our interpretation necessarily. If there's something about the material that you really feel has been biased or maybe isn't quite right, then we always encourage seekers to use their own discernment and to take the material for what it is, and understand that what we're saying is, you know, we're humans, it's our opinion, and if there's a part of the material that you feel might be off, then maybe explore that and follow your own guiding voice in how to interpret the material.
By all means.
And that's all I got to say about that.
Indeed. Well, closing us out, Carla. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to send us a question before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then. Haunting tone, and I'm